talking today with Robert Jensen, author of Citizens of the Empire, The Struggle to Claim Our Humanity. Robert, thanks for being with us today.
Great to be with you, Tom.
In reviewing the book, it seems as timely, if not even more so, now. You wrote it in 2004, I believe, and talk a lot about not only post 9/11 politics in the United States, but also post February 15th, 2003, that being the day when so many people around the world got out in the streets and protested the impending invasion of Iraq. Could you maybe just first give a brief synopsis of what the book's about and why you felt compelled to write this book?
Yeah, I think it's important to think through this question of empire. Prior to 9/11, if you made the argument that the United States was an empire, you were usually labeled part of the loony left and laughed out of the room. But post 9/11, we've had an interesting shift in which even people on the right, even people in the centers of power, acknowledge that the United States is in fact an empire different in some senses than perhaps the British Empire or the Roman Empire, but an empire in the sense of having a worldwide reach through both military and economic power, and also empire in its most fundamental sense, which is the capacity to control the political sovereignty of other nations. And the United States has that capacity, and it exercises it frequently in order to concentrate its own wealth and power. That's an empire, and it's, I think, very important that we have finally, at least many of us in the U.S., have come to terms with the notion that the U.S. is an empire. The idea at the core of the book is that we are different in another sense, however, and that is we have not subjects. The British Empire, for instance, had subjects. The Roman Empire did not have a free and fully democratic system. But in the United States today, at least in legal terms, we are a democracy, and we are citizens of an empire. And I think the challenge, as I would put it in its most concentrated form, to the people of the United States today is, can we be something unique in history? Can we be the first citizens of an empire who, through internal political activity, end the empire? And I don't mean end the United States. I don't mean destroy the country. I mean shift the United States from an imperial stance to a stance of being not the nation on top of the world, but one of many nations in the world. And that's really what is the idea at the core of the book. How do we do that? How do we come to terms with the reality of our own history and our own place in the world today? And how do we move forward from that?
Well, it brings me to the subtitle of the book, the full title being Citizens of the Empire, The Struggle to Claim Our Humanity. And I agree with you that nowadays it seems widely acknowledged that the United States is an empire, but it's interesting to read the second part of the title, The Struggle to Claim Our Humanity. Can you talk a little bit about what you mean by that?
Yeah, that's perhaps more controversial, because the argument I'm making, and is implicit in that subtitle, is that when you live in the empire, you cannot fully claim your humanity. That is, if your affluence, as it is in the United States, I think, if your affluence is based in part on the subjugation of people elsewhere, if we all know that in some way we are a rich and prosperous country because other people suffer historically and in the contemporary period, then we know that we don't really have access to our full humanity. We're not part of the world. We're disconnected from the world in that sense. And it's important that in the subtitle I call it The Struggle to Claim Our Humanity, not to reclaim our humanity, because I want to also emphasize not only the sort of imperial nature of the U.S. today, but acknowledge that historically we are in this position of wealth and power because of a series of quite barbaric acts that created the United States. So I think that if we want to truly claim that humanity, we both have to come to terms with our history and the contemporary period. And then, of course, that leaves us with a challenge. Can we organize politically to try and change the nature of this government and this system? And I think I say system meaning not just the public face of it in terms of our government, but also the economic system in which we live. I'm one of those people who still thinks it's important to critique capitalism, to talk about why, in fact, capitalism and democracy are fundamentally incompatible from my point of view, and why this system of capitalism is a threat not only to equality around the world and democracy, but also a threat, quite literally, to the continuing sustainability of the planet, the ecological question. All of these things, I think, are right in front of us. They are pressing and compelling questions, and in a country that offers a lot of ways to avoid those issues, a lot of what I like to refer to as the cheap toys of empire, television, cheap food, easy entertainment, lots of ways to disconnect from the world. I think our challenge is to reconnect with the world and face up to these issues.
Throughout the book, you do, in developing your argument, you do a considerable amount of looking at some terminology and defining those things and defining the differences between certain words, such as hope as opposed to optimism, being critical as opposed to being cynical, nationalism as opposed to patriotism. Can you just talk about some of those words and the differences between them for a minute?
Sure. In the bigger picture, when one faces political crises, when one sees the world in trouble and wants to act, I think we often want to say it's time to act, not to sit around and theorize, not to think. But this is actually a moment in which I think it's very important to theorize, and I don't mean that in a kind of academic and elitist sense, but in trying to understand how the world works. And sometimes that means trying to understand how language works and trying to look at ways in which language is used to keep us trapped. So, for instance, there's a chapter on the question of the support the troops rhetoric. We all want to be nice people. We all want to support our fellow countrymen and women, and so we want to, we often have a reaction where we want to support the troops, but I try to talk about how the whole support the troops rhetoric is designed to keep people away from political engagement, and we can't sort of fall into that trap. As you point out, I try and distinguish between what might seem like similar concepts but can be quite different. For instance, I talk about the difference between hope and optimism, which is a distinction many people have written about over the years. I talk about the fact that I'm not optimistic in the short term, but I have hope in the long term. That is, I look at the world, I see the way in which right-wing forces have really become extremely powerful in this country, and I'm not optimistic that I'm going to wake up tomorrow and see, you know, a progressive revolution in the U.S. It doesn't mean I don't have hope that that can't be achieved, but I think we have to distinguish between our rational assessments of what is possible in the short term, because if we don't do that, then we often develop very unrealistic expectations. And I think we have to distinguish between those things and a longer period question, a longer term question of how to have hope, how to understand that people are capable of very creative action, and that we look back at history and see that even when short-term attempts to bring progressive change failed, those people who kept at it over time, who had hope for the long term, were often very successful. And here I think it's incredibly important for people in the U.S. to think a lot about history, because this is a very short-term, immediate gratification kind of society. And that's true not only of the mainstream culture, but that does affect the left and the progressive movements as well. And there have been many points in history when immediate short-term change just wasn't possible, and people had to dig in for the long term. Certainly that's the story of the labor movement. It's the story of the civil rights movement. It's the story, in fact, of every movement that has tried to challenge concentrated power. And I think we have to, you know, pay attention to that so we don't develop unreasonable expectations and then be extremely depressed and passive and paralyzed when those short-term expectations aren't met.
So now, getting back to the timing of coming out with your book, Citizens mm-hmm. of the Empire, to a post 9/11 and also post February 15th, 2003 world. Now here we are, post 2004 election, something that caused a fair amount of progressives and liberals a certain level of depression and frustration.
Yeah.
Just recently, the Senate snuck through a provision that opens up the coastal plain of the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge to oil drilling. Every day we're hearing about deaths in Iraq and elsewhere. Where do people who want to somehow affect change find hope?
Well, here I might be a little unusual, because while I was not happy about the election of George Bush in 2004, I must say that I woke up that day without that sense of depression or angst that many people in the left progressive community had. And that's because I didn't have very high expectations. I thought the Democrats ran the worst possible campaign. I felt they had virtually